Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:42 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is September 7th. Well, I thought I'd kick off and look at Apple because the share gapped lower, but then recovered for a good part of the day. So it's worth considering what's happening in terms of both the product line and how well they're going to be able to sell those new products in China. So that's certainly something that we should be thinking about. Then let's also think about the broader question around China. And what they're doing at the G20 is basically saying that if you want us to follow through on all of our commitments to reduce carbon emissions, then we want some concessions on the kind of technology transfer that we've been prohibited from. So, that sounds reasonable, except for the fact that it's basically saying that we're blackmailing you. And what I think is really ironic is that China is the biggest producer of renewable energy equipment. So if you want to buy solar panels, then the vast majority of them are manufactured in China. If you want to buy equipment for wind turbines, well, the turbine companies might not be in China, but then there are lots of turbines also produced there. And that list can just go on and on. Whether you're looking at steel or cement, then China has more of it than anyone else. And of course, because they're still an emerging market country, well, then they also get to build as many coal-fired power stations as they like, and there's no prohibition on that from international trade. So they are manufacturing the renewable energy that the West is bending over backwards to buy, and then building coal-fired power stations at home, and basically holding the rest of the world hostage because they're by far the largest polluter. And eventually, that's going to become a point of contention. But of course, we're not quite there yet. And negotiators certainly don't want to pull the plug on the conversations with China and trying to ensure that there's some kind of global order and agreement on this whole UN-sponsored question of climate change. So that's certainly something that we can look at in terms of some of the charts. Then I think it's also worth considering where we are in terms of interest rates. And bond yields were a little bit lower in here today. There are, of course, questions around how high the dollar is going to go because it was stronger again in here today. And then, of course, we have the larger question overall of the integrity of government finances. Then I think it would be interesting to look at some of the higher technology companies. So, until this year, and I guess really until the end of 2021, there was a clear assumption that high growth was the only way to invest. And this year, it's been really more about the very large companies. So, what about the growth prospects of all those companies that have had these massive declines? And are they going to improve? And how many of them are indeed going to survive? So I think that's basically what we're going to be looking at in here today. So let's crack on. Because Apple looks like a topping formation. Now, it has not broken down through the 200-day moving average yet. But certainly on a weekly chart, we've got a succession of downward dynamics. And this looks like a lower high. So, downside follow through next week, and particularly a close below the 200-day moving average, would open up the scope for a reversion back down towards the 1,000-day moving average. The Chinese government is talking about expanding the number of companies and parts of the economy that will not be allowed to use Apple iPhones or Apple products. So obviously that is a significant threat. And the share did rebound in here today. So I think some investors are willing to bet that this is about as bad as the news gets. But the fact is now that Apple has avoided successfully avoided being used as a pawn in the great power politics evolving between the USA and China for the last several years, and that does appear to be ending. So, to simply conclude that this is the limit of selling pressure, I think would be a little bit too enthusiastic. I think it's also worth pointing out that the 3-year cycle of batteries and the 1,000 or lithium-ion batteries can be recharged 1,000 times. So that corresponds with a 3-year cycle in replacements. And therefore, we're not quite yet at the most opportune time for that replacement cycle. And that suggests that there's potential, even in a benign scenario, for Apple to pull back. Now let's think about what's happening inside China, because the CSI 300 and the A-share index were both in negative territory in here today, and coming down in quite a dynamic fashion. So even though sentiment around the imminent potential for defaults in the property sector has improved over the course of the last week, well, Country Garden started pulling back again in here today. The problem for a bond investor is that you just don't know. And this absence of any kind of credible answer on whether a company is going to default or not, whether they have the money or not, that is something that is driving investors away. But what it means is that every time there's been a rally, it's failed because investors are using these rallies as ways to offload their positions. And obviously, this is problematic. I was thinking about initiating a long position in the H shares index about a week ago, but I didn't do it because I just don't know what exactly is going to be required by investors in order to reinstill them with confidence that the administration in China is competent. And the reality is that perhaps they're overly competent and that they understand that this property problem isn't going to go away on its own and that eventually it will have to be addressed. And there is also the realistic possibility that what they are in fact doing is adopting more of a socialist ethic. There was a news story back in July that buses with advertising will no longer be allowed to drive through Tiananmen Square because the central government doesn't want to be associated with any kind of commercial activity. So that's just a small window into just how more socialist they are becoming. And they obviously have the communist ideal at heart and are progressively moving towards that ideal. So obviously, that is something that needs to be considered when we think about the very high cost of housing and the impact that that has on the spending patterns and livelihoods of large numbers of people. If in fact they are willing to compress property prices, well then that improves the affordability, improves the spending power of the population. It also would dip deep into the pocketbooks of the elite within China. And obviously, that's not something that is being particularly talked about right now. But eventually, they may just simply bring down the price of property and deleverage in advance of a great power competition with the rest of the world. Because when we think about the unfunded liabilities that the USA has, and the potential for great power competition to continue to escalate. Well, the unfunded liabilities, the fact that Social Security is basically going to be broke within 10 years, that suggests that the USA's debt problems are out there in the future. If China can get control of theirs now, then perhaps they're going to be in a better competitive position in future. And I think that is then when the whole question of de-dollarization will move front and center. but perhaps but not right away. Now, when we think about how Japan is responding to China, there's a lot of evidence within the price action that they're reindustrializing, remilitarizing. Their TOPIX index has been up almost every day for the last month, and it paused in here today. And we may get some consolidation to unwind that short-term overbought condition, but this looks like a very clear trend higher. And the yen was one of the few currencies today that was in positive territory versus the dollar. The next question, of course, will be about the continued weakness of the renminbi. So there was some speculation that they might attempt to defend the lows, but there's no sign of that yet. The reality, however, is that if they're going to try and support the stock market and support the property market, that's going to require a lot of money printing. And you can't have a strong currency and also print a huge quantity of it. And certainly that, I think, is something that's worth thinking about. There's clearly the potential here that China will devalue their currency in order to deal with the downward pressure on the property market. And when we think then about what that will do to demand for bonds, we can definitely see here that the 10-year yield has bounced and done so in a dynamic manner. And we're finally starting to see some selling pressure coming through in the Chinese government bond market. But this is also very reminiscent of what happened in the USA and in the US markets in 2021 and 22, where we had both bonds and equities falling at the same time. And that's exactly what's happening in China right now. So it definitely is suggestive of deleveraging. Now, let's think about the other side of the deleveraging. And if we think about what's happening in the USA, you have the regional banks rolling over. They encountered resistance in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and they dropped down to a new reaction low in here today. So that is beginning to suggest that some of the pressure from the commercial banking sector and the wider slowdown in the economy and tightness of liquidity is having an effect on both the regional banks and the S&P 500 banks. And the S&P 500 banks are also breaking lower here and encountering resistance very clearly in both the region of the 1,000 and 200-day moving averages. And this underperformance of the banking sector is something that we should be paying attention to. And then, of course, what this is also a reflection of is a response to tighter liquidity. Now, the ARK Innovation ETF continues to hover here around the 40 level, but we've seen some significant declines in the higher technology sector already. And now the broader question is whether the base formations are going to last indefinitely, or will we see another leg lower, or will they have the wherewithal to break higher? And I think this is going to be more about individual companies doing better or worse rather than a total sector question. So then when we think about the renewable energy sector, Ørsted is breaking down and continuing to accelerate on the downside. So the share, having peaked at the end of 2020 at 1400 crown, is now down to 370 and still declining. And then when we think about Vestas Wind Systems, well, Ørsted is a big customer. So if the customers are doing badly, then the manufacturer isn't going to be doing great either. And it does look like it's going to break on the downside. ChargePoint came through with earnings in here today. And they disappointed. So the share dropped down to a new reaction low. Now, it was well off the lows by the end of the day. And it is, well, it's at least going to have to break the sequence of lower rally highs in order to confirm a return to demand dominance. The only other listed company that's in the charging sector, or the EV charging sector, is Blink Charging, and that's also still trending lower. Shell did buy Volta, and Volta had an interesting business model that they were selling advertising, and then they were hoping that they would be able to offer charging for free. Well, that's unlikely to occur now that Shell has taken over, but Shell isn't investing a lot of money in recharging facilities. They had ambitions a couple of years ago of becoming one of the largest utilities, and they don't seem to be particularly eager on following through on that. But the share is moving on the upside, and it closed today above the 2500p level again. And even though it's a little overbought in the short term, well, we do have oil prices that remain really steady and still holding here around the $90 area. Now, it's a little overbought in the short term, but certainly there's the potential here that we could get a little consolidation. But it's got plenty of room in which to consolidate and still be on a recovery trajectory. What I found interesting today was that the Saudi Arabian market is beginning to roll over, and I think that is lending some credence to the view that Saudi Aramco is going to try and sell a big block of shares, and that should weigh on the entire sector. But of course, the other point is that the Saudi Arabian market is very commodity focused, and commodities have been under pressure because of what's happening in China. All of this. I think there is this blindness to the pressure in China and what kind of impact that could have on commodity demand. But when we look at the individual charts, it's obvious that there is a problem. So copper prices have been locked between the 1,000 and the 200-day moving average for the last 6 months, but we're down again in here today. And my gut feeling tells me that eventually it's going to break lower. Then let's think about the coal price. And the coal future went haywire on the upside in the last couple of years and then came all the way back down. Now it is stabilizing in the region of the upper side of the base formation. But the more likely scenario here is that we're going to be in a prolonged period of ranging, even if the price is sustained. Now, Whitehaven Coal, which is a major exporter of metallurgic coal and thermal coal, is trending downwards as well, and that's reflecting the medium-term outlook for the coal market. There was a big uptick in Chinese demand, but then, of course, the question is, are domestic Chinese companies more attuned to the risk of a devaluation of the currency, and are they simply buying now ahead of a significant devaluation? I think there is really a credible reason to think that is in fact the case. Then BHP Group does look like it's going to weaken further here, and it is pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average. The South African stock market, the Johannesburg All Share, was also in negative territory today and also pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average. And then let's look at a South African ETF so that we can strip out the currency influence. And then we can see that it is now on the cusp of breaking on the downside. And of course, that's also going to have an effect on the value of commodity-related currencies. So the Australian dollar was quiet today, but the medium-term downtrend remains really quite obvious. Then the Canadian dollar has been weakening against the US dollar, and there is a clear trend of outperformance there by the US dollar on the upside. So the South African rand had been threatening to appreciate for much of the early part of the year, but now it is coming back up towards, or well, the dollar is going back up towards its peaks. Brazilian growth is starting to improve, and was the estimates for growth were raised in here today. But the real is beginning to weaken, and that's a direct response to the fact that they are beginning to cut interest rates. So that's also a significant factor for Mexico, where the performance of the currency was the primary driver of the outperformance of the stock market over this year. And with the peso now unwinding the overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average, then the outlook for the economy is going to be front and center. And particularly if the currency breaks down through the 200-day moving average, then that's going to take a lump out of the stock market performance. I do think, though, that Mexico will be a buy on the dip, and I think that this is not the limit of the dip. We might see additional weakness and perhaps a reversion back down to the 1,000-day moving average. I think that Mexico is going to be one of the primary beneficiaries of reshoring. And then India is going to be one of the primary beneficiaries of offshoring or friend shoring. And the Nifty index continues to steady in here. And it's also being supported by the Bombay Banks Index. And that generally does help to support the outlook for the stock market. And it has been a lead indicator on several occasions. So the strength of the banking sector in India is helping to support that market. I think the weakness of the banking sector in the USA is something that is eventually going to bite into the continued outperformance of the growth sector. And the Nasdaq continues to pause around the 16,000 level. Now, let's also think about the growth sector more generally. I think one of the sectors that has the clearest potential to outperform and to deliver massive technological innovation is biotech. And it's not performing right now. Now, we had very strong performance for the sector in 2020 because it was the vaccine manufacturers that were really thriving. And they're not thriving right now because spending on the pandemic has basically evaporated. Now, the next point, of course, is that it's not like there aren't really promising therapies being delivered. And M&A activity has been one of the primary drivers of performance. So the best performing share in the sector this year has been Reata Pharmaceuticals because it's basically been bought by Biogen. But Bridge Biopharma has just announced success in its phase two trials and is entering phase three trials. So that popped on the upside and is in now a recovery trend overall. M&A activity is central to the health of the biotech industry more broadly, and it's basically the business model of a large number of companies. But it is now going to take a little bit of time for some of these companies to get back on track after the bulge of permissioning that was allowed during the pandemic, as well as all the money that was made available. And that's going to take a little time. And then we can think about Illumina. Now, I think it's a very interesting case because prior to 2021 and 22, it had this volatile ranging phase and then big breakouts. And every time it released a new machine, then it would surge on the upside. And the more back history we look at, the more that becomes obvious. So there was a big range and a breakout in 2013, and then about a 4-year cycle. So it broke out in 2018, and then it broke out in 2021, and then collapsed. So they've just released this year their new machine, and it has not resulted in a breakout on the upside. In fact, the share is breaking on the downside. And Illumina has really been the central company that helped to bring down the cost of genetic sequencing. And that isn't really in question, but they really have piqued the interest of regulators. And they've forced through their acquisition of Grail, and now that is coming back to bite them. Now, Grail is probably one of the most attractive high growth companies out there. Blood biopsies represent an incredible innovation and obviously a massive use case for genetic sequencing machines. So it's obvious why Illumina might want them, and also equally obvious why a regulator might think that antitrust is a significant issue here. But eventually, Grail company is either going to become part of Illumina or it is going to be spun off. And now that everybody knows about Grail, then the valuation for that company could easily exceed Illumina before very long. And then the other company that people are interested in is QuantumScape. Now the share is still trading below the IPO level, and it's hovering around here. Now, of course, the problem is that they still have plenty of cash, and they have cash that's going to keep them going until well into 2025, but they don't expect to have any revenue until 2027. So there will be a revenue raise in the future. And that is on the assumption that they can follow through on all of the deliverables between now and then. Solid-state batteries have been the big promise from the battery sector and at the wider technology sector for almost a decade already, and they're still 5 years away. And it's not like the technology doesn't exist. And we can think about several of the Japanese companies. We're going to use the 2020 Olympics to showcase their solid-state batteries. But that doesn't mean that they're ready for commercial utility. And assuming that they can get revenue going by 2028, then that should ensure that eventually it will break out of its base formation. If they fail on their deliverables, the company's going to go bust. And I think that's where we are in terms of this wider technology sector. There are some promising technologies that have been developed, but that the timeline to commercialization is not nearly as near as was sold during the big surge in IPOs during 2020, at a time when there was a lot of enthusiasm around technological innovation amid exceptionally low interest rates. The problem for many of these companies is that the uncertainty inherent in their businesses becomes very obvious when interest rates are high and difficult to discern when interest rates are low. And right now, interest rates are high and could potentially stay high for as long as it takes for unemployment to rise and then for an eventual response by central banks to reduce rates and make money available again. How much that or how much money is provided is going to be very much impacted by the outlook for inflationary pressures. And of course, that is going to be, I think, very tied to oil prices and then also to the question of wages and availability of money within the economy after a recession and how long it stays there. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.